to Hustlin' with Holly. I'd like to welcome today's guest, Max Mooney. Max is the proud owner of Narrative Coffee Company, located in downtown Everett. Narrative Coffee won the 2017 Sprudgy Awards for Best New Cafe in 2017, beating out six other cafes that were nominated throughout the world, from Dublin to Seoul. You can also find them featured in the Everett Herald, which continues to document their successes, their many successes, I should mention. Not to mention, Narrative has also won not one, but two of the Evie Awards for Best Cafe and Friendliest Staff. Other notable press include King 5 News, Daily Coffee News, and Seattle Refined, and that's just to name a few. This coffee company and staff are well-loved by the Everett Snohomish community, and I am stoked to sit down and talk with founder Max Mooney. Welcome, Max. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. You're really gassing me up over here.
Well, yeah, this is definitely quite the company. Like, you guys have achieved so much. You're literally a pillar in your community. Everybody wants to talk to you. Everybody wants to visit. Everybody wants to just see Narrative, and it's quite the little astounding place. The aesthetic is amazing. I think one of the press articles written about you said it's a San Francisco cafe brought to Washington. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, definitely. I do. It's from the Herald.
Yeah, I thought about it for a second because I've only visited SF once. Ironically, I visited a Starbucks, so I really have nothing to compare it to. We were just there for about a day or two, had to do some small stuff, but I get that. Like, I think they're definitely right in thinking that. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. Given that San Francisco is known for being a hub of architecture, I took it as a compliment.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, it must be the interior. Like, that makes sense for San Francisco.
Yeah, the quality of the cafe scene there is really solid too. So yeah, it's a compliment as far as I'm concerned.
Have you been to SF a lot?
Yeah, I've been twice now, I think. I toured cafes whenever I was there. So yeah, I got a good experience of the coffee shop scene there.
That's awesome. What was your favorite one?
Whenever I visited last, there were quite a few that hadn't opened yet that I bet you know, I've had their coffees and I bet they would probably kind of supplant them. But whenever I was there, Sideglass had some really amazing coffee. And I had actually a really positive experience with the customer service at Blue Bottle.
I've always wanted to go to Blue Bottle.
Yeah, they're definitely like the most famous one from San Francisco these days.
Oh, yeah. They got like 200 to 300,000 followers on Instagram. Everybody's got their merch. They're in like a lot of YouTube videos. Like, you just can't really love coffee or be anywhere coffee and not hear about Blue Bottle.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they've really expanded a lot.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, and we talked a little bit about this earlier in the week when I was sitting at Narrative just doing some homework. How is your business doing? How are you doing? Especially during these delicate times that are COVID-19. I mean, like, yeah. Everybody that has a business or a side hustle is having to navigate through a global pandemic. And you just don't kind of foresee that kind of stuff. You know, you're just like, oh, started a business, serving my community. I'm chilling. And then boom, global pandemic. Like, what's that like?
Yeah, definitely. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced before. That's for sure. Ever since the start of it, a lot of my, you know, business heroes have said the same things, you know, and they've been doing this for 50, 60 years at times. So it feels at least encouraging to know that there are other people that are working through it alongside me, which is encouraging, but it's definitely a challenge. It's a fight for survival in many ways. Feels like every day is kind of a little bit on the cusp. Since things have kind of leveled out in terms of not in terms of the level of busyness and revenue that we were doing before, but at least in terms of repeatability, it's been a little bit more manageable. For a while there, everything was so unpredictable. And whenever you're in a business with perishable products, like, you know, the food business, unpredictability is a really huge killer. Being able to dial in your supply chain kind of requires a level of predictability that's really helpful. So it really very much felt like starting the business all over again, having to reassess what our new levels would be and kind of where we would land. And, you know, it's like we found after about a month and a half or so, we found kind of some patterns again and could kind of start dialing things back in and trying to get the business running at a healthy pace, even within lower revenues, but at least still, you know, making a level of profit that we need to be successful and, you know, like, stay in business, you know. So that's been much more manageable after we've, you know, been in this pandemic for 9 months now, I guess.
So you've had to kind of re-innovate, literally.
Yeah, there's kind of a joke amongst some of my friends that, you know, it's like we've had to launch new business models, you know. For a while there, it was every other week. We're, you know, completely redoing our business model. And it's like, today we're takeout business only. We have to figure out how to run a completely takeout business. And now we're a mix of both. And now, you know, we can sell alcohol. Now we can't. Now we can only do it during certain times. So it's very much a nimble period, you know, and I'm actually really grateful that we're a little bit smaller in that way, because it's a lot easier to make nimble pivots when you're smaller and you have a smaller group of people that you have to try to communicate with and set up for success. You know, the larger your company is, a lot of times the more difficult it is to make those big pivots. I'm grateful for the size that we are right now because it's made it a little bit easier to manage those kind of big time pivots that we've had to do, even from just closing down completely and just selling half gallon lattes to be able to get back to a takeout only kind of environment. It's been a challenge, but good one. And our team has been amazing. They've been super strong throughout it. Just been dialed in and here for us and ready to go. So,
and it's a little different because you don't have a drive-thru. Like, you're a walk-in, sit-down cafe. You don't have a drive-thru. And that was one of the reasons like McDonald's and Starbucks were able to kind of just succeed when the governor said, okay, it's not just essentials. You can have a drive-thru open. McDonald's still hasn't opened any of their lobbies. Yeah. And I don't know if they ever will again. It's kind of interesting because this dynamic is working for them. Starbucks is kind of slowly opening up their lobbies. So people with drive-thrus are actually a little bit slower to open, and everybody that could open just kind of jumped at the chance, of course, following CDC guidelines. And
yeah, exactly. You know, it's an interesting thing where we've always been a really sit-in dominant business. You know, it's like partly because our atmosphere is nice, but partly because, you know, we're in a downtown environment, so people come in and spend time on their breaks and those sorts of things. So, you know, our business has always been about 80% dine-in up until the point where the governor announced a stay-at-home order where they were closing dining rooms all across the state. We were actually fine. You know, it's like we were down maybe 5% because there was a 3-4 week period there where businesses had sent a lot of employees to work from home. There weren't requirements for restaurants or anything like that yet. On the 21st of March, I think, is when we announced it. You know, it's like we saw an immediate drop in sales, like 60-70% the next day. So it's been a little bit of a challenge for us. And we definitely try to pivot. You know, the minute he announced that that was going to be happening, I started developing a plan how to get this business running as a curbside pickup kind of environment, doing everything we could with that. Our infrastructure is still not set up for that. I built this place to be a sit-in cafe, you know, and so it's like the places that had drive-thrus, like you said, were already much more well-suited to be successful off of this kind of moment. Not like anyone could have planned for it or anything. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. But yeah, it definitely helped a lot of the larger national chains a lot more than the small businesses. You know, their infrastructure was just better set up for doing this. You know, they're already kind of convenience based, which has mostly meant orienting itself around cars, you know, which has been a lot more kind of critical during this time, I think, especially for anywhere that's not a major city, you know, that doesn't have a ton of like downtown residents. It's like Everett is a city of about 110,000 people. The vast majority of the people in Everett are car dependent. Drive-thrus do much more successfully than a sit-down does. So yeah, it's been an interesting challenge.
I'd imagine that. But I think you've done a phenomenal job. I've been kind of following. I didn't come up when you were doing like curbside because I was working. Anybody that was employed was trying to work when it was the most severe because
you got a job, keep it.
Yep. I was working 40 hours a week. I never got to go anywhere. And I'm just now, we're in October and I'm just now getting out of the house because I'm also a part-time student. And so it's like, you know that how that is. But I've really missed this place, and getting to sit down last week was really awesome. I had planned to spend much of my fall in here, just downtown. I love Everett.
Me too. Yeah.
It's so great.
It's such a great city.
You couldn't have picked a better location.
Thank you.
It's great. Like, just perfect. I know it's easy to talk negatively about Everett because it does have its ups and downs, but the natives and anybody that grew up here know just how special this city is. And I'm so glad to have someone like you and the shop in this city because it just makes Everett all the more better, you know? And
thank you.
Plus, you're getting us good press, man.
You know, that's been a pretty big goal of mine, actually, you know, is to help encourage, not just to get press or anything like that, but just to help encourage other, you know, entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs that Everett is an incredible environment for a would-be entrepreneur. The single word that I think of when I think of the city is opportunity. It's a great place. It has such a perfect geographical location, you know, it's right on the water. So manufacturing businesses or tech businesses or anyone can really operate out of here. There's a lot of infrastructure built into here. You know, we have the largest public marina in the country and we process more revenue through our port here than the Port of Seattle does, you know? And so it's like we're, you know, our infrastructure here is incredible. You know, the only thing we're really missing is like a lot of major tech infrastructure in terms of like internet access and those sorts of things. An entrepreneur, you know, you can really make yourself here. The commercial rent is not anywhere near Seattle, you know, it's like half the cost of Seattle or cheaper. So there's really a lot of opportunity up here. So that was one of my big goals, is just to help people see that like Everett will support you if you're doing a good job. You know, it's like a lot of people kind of assume that Everett and the people in Everett wouldn't support something. You know, I had 8 people, I think, tell me that this, like, whenever I told them where I was going to be located, that were like, oh, good luck. I've seen places come and go out of there, you know, before we open. And it's like, man, I'm running the numbers. This seems like a really good spot to me. You know, it's like, it's got everything that I need. And people just like, good luck. Like, I've just seen, you know, so much turnover. And, you know, whenever you just spend like $200,000 on a place that you don't have, you know, it like, that's a pretty stressful thing to hear. But, you know, I think we've really helped show that Everett would support it and will support businesses that are doing interesting things here. And I think a lot of people underestimate how many millennials live here, you know, and how many people live here that just like want a different experience. You know, they don't want the same cookie cutter experience that you get at, you know, if you go to a chain in every other state. They want something that's unique in Everett. So that is very much my goal, is just help inspire some people that I might be able to kind of reach to give it a shot and try it, you know, and see, you know, try their hand at it and make it work here.
Yeah. And the rent is cheap. And basically what you just said is, if you believe in the people, then the people will believe in you. But yeah. It's pretty unfair for you to ask, oh, believe in me first. But you've proven yourself. You've gone against the grain. I know it's really hard to hear that kind of negative feedback, but you've just really got to hold on to that dream and keep going. And you're living proof of that. And I think this community will continue to support you.
Yeah, they definitely have. They've kept us alive during the pandemic. You know, a lot of the businesses that have closed, just, you know, nationally even, you know, I have friends with lots of different coffee places around, you know, in different areas. And I think one of the big things that I've seen almost universally is that all the businesses that are still holding on are all really community driven. If they're in a business model that wasn't naturally suited, you know, like the sit down places and stuff like that, if they're really community driven and they really try to build community, I've noticed that there seems to be a strong desire from their own community to keep those places rooted. And I think it's very much a situation where if you build your business around serving your community will come to help you when you need it. You know, it's pretty much the simplest way to put it. And I've seen that happen in so many places. So it's been really cool just to see not only our community come out and really support us and help us, you know, survive and make it through this challenging time, but to see that happen for other friends of mine and just other businesses, you know, seeing like their people just come out and support them and do whatever they can to help keep them going. It's really cool.
Do you live far from here?
Yeah,
do you live in Everett?
Yeah, I live about 18 minutes away. I live in Clearview. So it's kind of out in the sticks between Snohomish and Woodinville.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah,
so
I've lived
you're
there
close
for
enough.
8-10 years now.
All right, real community member. That's great. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I grew up around here. My best friend lives actually 10 minutes away from here, and so she actually introduced me to this place.
Thanks, best friend.
Yep, and that's kind of how I got my roots in Everett, because I'm from Linwood originally, and that's in the States. I'm originally from Kenya, East Africa, but in America, we usually lived in Linwood, and I always spent so much time at her house, and we always just came downtown Everett.
Nice, yeah.
And that's just, I love Everett so much.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
Great city. If you're in Washington, strongly encourage you to visit Everett, Washington.
Yeah, it's a really great city. It's big enough to have everything that you want and need. Once you've been around for a little bit, you can run into people that you know on the street, which is really cool. I like Everett a lot.
That's awesome. And before Narrative, you used to work at Cafe Ladro and Spotted Cow, right?
Yeah, Cafe Ladro. Yep.
Ladro,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and Spotted Cow. Yeah. So I worked at the Linwood Cafe Ladro on 196 and 99. Yeah. And then that was where I first started in coffee. And then I worked at Spotted Cow for about 3 years.
Did you have any significant roles at both those places or?
Yeah, I was a barista at Cafe Ladro. I came in with some coffee knowledge, but they really helped me, like, you know, learn how to work in a coffee shop. At Spotted Cow, I was the coffee educator. Basically, I was the director of coffee there, so I kind of helped source green coffee and helped kind of set roast profiles and establish training protocols and just kind of anything that was coffee related there, I kind of took under my kind of wing, I guess. So, yeah, I did that for quite a while there. And I was involved in kind of the leadership team there. And so I was involved in trying to help the business grow and really help, you know, we saw a lot of success at growing the business whenever during my tenure there. We were trying to see about expanding, and the ownership at the time has changed owners a couple of times since then, but at the time they were talking about expanding, and I, you know, I really felt like Everett was the right place to do that. Put together an expansion proposal and kind of aggregated all my data, put together this proposal, and they didn't want to go forward with it. A lot of it was due to kind of some of their, you know, they've been around for a while and Everett's had a reputation, you know, that maybe isn't fair to it, you know, which we've already kind of alluded to, and that very much kept them from wanting to invest in the community here. But I felt like it was a really incredible opportunity, and so when they declined on it, I asked if they would be okay if I tried to invest in it and take the steps to do that, and they were supportive of that, and like, you know, even gave me a small loan to get started and stuff. So yeah, they were supportive and awesome and really amazing people to work for. Ultimately, I really believed in this community and felt like it was the right place to be, so put my own money on it.
Well, hey, high risk equals big rewards, you know the saying.
Yep. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Awesome. That's beautiful. So would you say like working in a coffee shop was kind of pivotal to your success as a coffee owner?
Yeah, definitely.
For somebody that's looking to maybe have their own shop one day, or even a business of any kind, what would you say to them? Kind of
for coffee in particular is a really high skill, which is going to maybe surprise a lot of people, but the style of coffee that we do, you know, specialty coffee, it's got a pretty high skill cap to it, you know? And so it's like, there's a lot to learn. Our training manuals are, you know, 20, 30 pages long. So, you know, there's a lot to learn. And I think a lot of people underestimate coffee and underestimate how complex of a business it is to run it well. And so my encouragement is, if somebody wants to, you know, open up, they have a dream to open up their own coffee shop someday because they want it to be a really cute place and have it like have fun decorations and all that stuff. That's really cool. But whenever you're going to put down $200,000 on a business, you should really understand that business before you make such a big investment, because you can decorate a house for a lot cheaper than $200,000. So if you want a cute space to hang out in, I highly recommend just making that. Don't go into the coffee business because you want to have a cool place, or, you know, it's like always been a dream. Like, really understand the business. You know, it is a business, and it might be a dream, but if you don't understand it and you don't know how to do it well, it'll become a nightmare. And I've seen that happen to so many people where they dump their entire life savings into a place and then just don't go in with their eyes fully open and don't know. That's always my first recommendation to someone who's never worked in cafe before and they want to open a coffee shop, is to just go work as a barista. Ultimately, the business is slow. You're going to be the daily barista for a long time. Make sure you're okay with waking up every single day at 6 o'clock or 4:30 or even 3:30, depending on what style of a coffee business you own. Make sure that you're okay with doing that life, and then learn as much as you possibly can on someone else's dollar as you can. You know, it's like when you work for someone else, you get to learn how their business works, and they'll pay you to do that. If you start your own business, then you have to figure out how your own business works, and you're losing money, and so you're paying your own self to do that. Go and learn as much as you can from someone else's business as you possibly can. That way, at least, you know, you've learned a lot. You go in with your eyes really open and knowing kind of what you need to do to have a successful business whenever you decide to do it. So that's always my biggest thing. Go get educated, like anything. So if you want to work in a field or you want to do something, have a good understanding of it. Even if you don't necessarily know every single daily inner working, you need to understand, you know, kind of the basics of how to run that type of a business. Make sure that it's something that you're really willing to commit to, and then know how to find the people in that business. Those are some big things. And whenever you work with people and you work as a barista, it gives you kind of all three of those things at the same time, which is really helpful.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. That's definitely very knowledgeable. How many years did you work under someone else before actually starting your own shop?
I've been doing this now for about as many years now. I guess I've been flying solo about as long as I work for somebody else now.
All right. What's your favorite drink here?
I'm an espresso drinker for the most part whenever I go to a cafe or something. So I usually will get an espresso. I also like filter coffee, which is like our hand brewed pour overs. So I generally drink just black coffee and try coffees from different places. I really like exploring the flavor of coffee. A lot of people feel like they don't have a sophisticated enough palate to like taste the difference or whatever. I found that to be not true. Every single person I've ever like given 2 cups of coffee to back to back can taste the difference. Just that you're not in an environment to comparatively taste coffee. And so you just assume that you can't taste the difference, but you really can. And so I think it's really fun to just explore the different flavors that coffee has to offer and try coffee from Ethiopia and Colombia and Kenya and Panama. And they all taste different and they have different qualities. I love doing that through espresso and just through filter coffee.
That's awesome. So when you say that you like to test espresso, do you mean like an actual just a shot or like mm-hmm. a cafe latte?
Yeah. I usually just drink shots of espresso. Ground coffee, put through an espresso machine with water. But I do like, you know, a latte or something. My preferred milk drink, if I'm going to have a milk-based drink, is a 6 ounce espresso of milk or like a cappuccino. Something with 2 shots of espresso and about 4.5 ounces of milk is kind of my ideal balance for a drink.
That sounds great. Yeah. I love a good cappuccino. Java House, which is, I guess, the Starbucks of Kenya.
Okay.
If you ever go there, they make an amazing cappuccino. You know, there's cool. Literally nothing that matches, but Narrative could probably rival. So
cool. Yeah, I'll have to go whenever I find myself in Kenya sourcing coffee.
You'd love it there. It's a great, it's a coffee
Noted.
Capital. Yeah, Java House. It's amazing. Phenomenal place.
Kenya is widely known for being, you know, one of the best producing countries of coffee in the coffee world. If you ask any coffee professional, 35 to 40% of people would say their favorite growing region is Kenya. Really incredible coffees out of there.
You're the first person I've heard say that. And so that was surprising and honoring. I think it's really cool that we are able to export both coffee and tea. Not a lot of countries do both.
Yeah, it's true.
And we're one of the few that does both and lead in both. And so I'm just proud to be Kenyan.
Yeah, I think Kenyan coffees, I can say with confidence that Kenyan coffees on the whole command the highest prices of any coffees in the world, just consistently from the bottom to the top are just consistently the highest prices. The Kenyan government does an incredible job of managing their coffee program there and just doing a really good job.
I was going to ask, you kind of talked a little bit about this when you said that you decided to go all in on your pitch to have a coffee shop in downtown Everett. What got you on the path that was, I want to start a coffee shop?
I guess I have to talk about the first time I had an amazing latte. I had a really incredible latte. It was a 16-ounce caramel latte at Zoca in Kirkland.
I've been there. That's a great place.
Yeah.
Life-changing latte.
Yeah, it was a life-changing latte. My friend Jace took me there in 2009. I went to school at Northwest in Kirkland. He invited me out to coffee. He's like, dude, the foam is amazing. And I was like, okay. Like, he's always been a foodie. And so it's like, whenever he's like pretty stoked on something, I usually want to go try it. So I had it. It's just like, dang, this foam is incredible. Like, you know, it was like well foamed. It had a rosetta on the top of it. So it had like beautiful latte art. It was the first time I had like sat in at a coffee shop, actually, and just like sat in a coffee shop and had a coffee in like a for here mug. Usually I just had like drive through coffee. I grew up in a Mormon household, actually. So I didn't really have much coffee in my life other from the time that I was like 6 to 14 or so. And then in Arizona, which doesn't have like a huge coffee scene in the rural parts, whenever my dad and stepmom separated, we had a little more coffee and we ended up moving up to Washington. And so, you know, I'd done the drive through coffee stand thing and had some coffees there. But this was just like, it was the environment plus like the quality of the coffee and just like the technique and everything. It was just like, holy moly, I had no idea coffee could taste this good. It was like, okay, I'm super into this. Like, this is amazing. How did this happen? And then I was using a website at the time called Stumble Upon. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not, but it was kind of like a random button for the internet. Like, you just kind of give it a bunch of lists of things that you're interested in, and then you just hit stumble, and then it'll literally just drop you onto a new website related to an interest that you're interested in. And I'd clicked coffee as one of my interests, and it dropped me on this website called coffeegeek.com, and it was talking about how to steam your milk properly and how to get that texture. And it was just like, it was talking about kind of the lipid structure of milk and the casein kind of structures and all sorts of stuff. It was just like fascinating, and like, I'm such a geek. You know, I really like learning the hows behind things, and I tend to like deep dive into stuff quite a lot. And so it was really fascinating for me. And so I kind of started reading more about it. And then that put me on to like learning about extraction theory and how coffee like literally extracts into water and the process that happens there. And then that got me into like roasting and learned that you can roast your own coffee at home. And so I started learning how to do that. Got an espresso machine and taught myself how to do latte art and just like went down the rabbit hole, basically. Right around the time where I started roasting coffee at home, I had some friends that just saw, you know, I put it on like social media or whatever, and had some friends that asked if they could buy coffee from me. So I was like, okay, like, I guess, yeah, I can figure that out. I'll do that. I'll roast a coffee for some friends or whatever. And so I figured, well, if they're going to buy coffee from me, I should at least have a name for it. And then, so in 2012, that's when I came up with the name Narrative, just to kind of like help showcase the story of a coffee and how it kind of interacts with people's own stories and stuff. So started roasting coffee at home and selling it under the Narrative name. And then I decided that I was actually working at a church at the time. Realized that I needed to I was very part-time and wasn't making a lot of money. And so I, you know, needed to take on a second job. And so I can work at McDonald's or I can try to get a job at a coffee shop. And I'm super interested in coffee right now. So that was whenever I kind of went out and got a job at Ladro, started working for Cafe Ladro right then, and kind of just sat on the Narrative thing for a while. And then whenever, you know, I was like committed to Spot a Cow and trying to make that the best business that I could. And whenever they decided that it wasn't what they wanted to do, I was like, okay, well, I'll just revive the Narrative name and get back to it and try to do that. So yeah, it's kind of how I ended up here.
What would you consider to be some of your greatest challenges in regard to your existence in the coffee world? What's been the hardest? What's something that people might not think about? Because, you know, it's just human mentality to think, oh, this will be easy. Oh, I'll be good at this. But what's something that you just never saw coming?
It depends on if we're talking about the coffee product itself or running a coffee business.
So let's do both.
Okay, sure. Product itself, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that coffee is at its most essence, it's two ingredients, right? It's water and coffee, you know? And it's like, you can have such incredibly different experiences just out of two ingredients. There's so much technique that goes into it. So I think what originally attracted me to coffee was how deep you can go with it. You know, it's like, there's almost no bottom to it. You can study, it's the most chemically complex thing that human beings consume, period, bar none. Like, wine is like, has 300, 400 aromatic compounds. Coffee at its low end has 700, and at the upper end has 12 to 1300 aromatic compounds in it. It is the most chemically complex thing that we can have as human beings, you know? So there's an infinite amount of new things to learn about it. And I really appreciate that. Like, it feels almost like you can find new things about it and learn more about it as you kind of go. So that's been really cool. I think that's part of what attracted me to it. And then you can take that same level of care and extend it beyond, you know, one thing that I think a lot of people don't think about is an espresso and milk. So like a cafe latte or cafe, like a cappuccino, cafe macchiato, all those kind of Italian terms, those are all just different names for the combination of espresso and milk together. So an espresso and milk is a three ingredient drink, you know, at its most essential, it's water, coffee and milk. So a lot of people don't put that much stock into the milk itself. And a lot of people don't even realize how different milk can be. You know, most people are used to buying, you know, like non-fat or 1% or 2%. And a lot of people like don't understand anything really about milk other than that they just get it from a grocery store and it, you know, comes in a jug. If you ask people like, what does the 1% mean? A lot of folks don't actually know. It's the amount of fat content that's in the milk. And whole milk is usually legally has to be 3.25% milk fat to be called whole milk, but it doesn't always come out of the cow at that fat level content. Different breeds of cows produce different levels of fat content, and they also produce different proteins and different like flavor compounds within them. So you can actually get milk that tastes a little bit different out of different breeds of cows, even depending on their diet. One of the easiest things that people notice is sometimes, especially if you have milk from a small dairy, and especially if they're like in an onion production area, if a cow was in an onion patch, you can taste onion in the milk.
Really?
It's really remarkable. Same with garlic. So it's like the diet itself really makes a difference, and it's really fun to explore milk kind of on a different level. And so like the dairy that you work with actually makes a really big difference. And so that's one thing that we do here too. And part of why like our prices aren't super cheap is because we like our milk is really expensive. It costs us $5.62 a gallon. You know, that's our cost, like our wholesale cost that we get. That's more than twice what most people pay in the grocery store for milk. And a lot of that's because they work with Guernsey cows. Production cows are Holsteins. Guernseys have a different protein structure. And Jerseys kind of, they have two different types of Jersey cows that can produce these different types of proteins. But Guernseys produce A2 proteins. And then most other cows produce A1 proteins. And so Guernseys have this like really rich yellow milk. It's like looks a lot more golden colored than normal milk. You know, milk normally looks pretty white. This looks like a kind of a rich yellow. And our dairy, that's Grace Harbor Farms, by the way, they're up in Linden, but they don't separate out their cream ever. And so literally the fat content that comes out of the cow is what we get, which depends on the time of year, what their diet is. So it kind of changes a little bit, which is really interesting. But I think there's a big difference in flavor between milk that's had the cream separated and milk that has never had the cream separated. And almost every dairy separates their cream out because that's how they make butter or half and half and kind of those other products that are like important value revenue streams for dairy farmers. But ours has always just left the cream in. I think a lot of people underestimate the quality of the ingredients that go into a cup of coffee and underestimate the amount of work that it takes to get kind of a really strong ecosystem of suppliers. I have a really close relationship with our dairy. I go up there. I was actually just up there last week hanging out with our dairy farmer. He lives an hour and a half away, so it's not super easy, but building that relationship and maintaining that and then understanding kind of what goes into the process and understanding how it's going to impact our business and how to work within that. It's a lot of fun, but it's also really a fun challenge. I think that's one thing that maybe I didn't expect, having to get more involved in that. And then on the business owning side of things, just managing humans it was a skill set that like I had a little bit of experience with, but maybe not as much as would have been helpful, you know. And just it's an interesting experience trying to become a boss and moving from a space of being an employee and being a barista versus being like the actual boss. It's a very different role and people have different expectations for you, and learning how to be okay with that in a lot of ways. It's challenging because, you know, I'm pretty congenial and I'm good friends with most of my staff, but there are times when it's like I still have to be a boss. Not the same relationship with my kids, but it's similar to having a relationship with your kids where you're like, I want to be your friend, but at the same time, there are times when I'm going to have to make a decision that you're not going to like, you know? And it's like, you have to build the trust and empathy and understanding and all that. And those are what carry you through those times when your decision-making maybe doesn't line up with something that your staff necessarily wants. But navigating those relationships is really complicated. And I probably underestimated it a little bit whenever I was first starting. It's something I take really seriously, and just like having good, strong relationships with my staff, just like care about them too, you know, is like a really big thing. And being a small business owner is really challenging. I don't have the financial means to offer a lot of the incentives that like big businesses do. Like Starbucks actually treats their employees really well. They like help pay for college and, you know, give healthcare and a lot of those things. I just literally can't afford to do that. So it's like, I have to make up for it with other things, you know, which is like oftentimes if you ask a few of my staff, any times I've ever helped them out or whatever, and you'll find that like I've been underneath their car, you know, like fixing their car problems or whatever, trying to just help do what I can for my staff and just being a good friend, you know, like that, some of that's just literally just being a good friend and a good human, you know, a thing I maybe wasn't expecting. It's a challenge, but it's good. And I love it. I love my people here. I have the best people.
Management does sound hard. I've never managed anyone myself, and I've always thought, what would it be like to be a boss? And it's, you know, you really just don't know until you try it.
Yep.
I don't know if it's in my future or not. It's an interesting concept. You mentioned that Starbucks has benefits.
Mm-hmm.
When I worked there as a barista, they actually pay for your Spotify premium account.
Whoa, that's
you
a,
put
that's
in
cool
some
benefit.
Code thing, they're a Spotify partner, and you get free Spotify premium.
Nice.
And it was a small thing, but it was really bougie thing. And then I got spoiled really quickly because that's how I have Spotify now, is because they were paying for it and I never had to pay for it. And then when I left, they stopped paying for it. And they have a pretty good employee discount. So I was there way too often. And then I used the tips to pay for my gas. So it was this little dynamic. But you were talking about just being a friend to your employees. And I can definitely see that being a really big deal around here. I can't say that I was necessarily really good friends with my bosses or the management team, because in a bigger infrastructure like Starbucks, since it is a national chain, they do have to have that boss-employer relationship. So they might not try as hard. Obviously, you have to be nice.
That's actually a healthy thing in a lot of ways. Because like a lot of times small businesses, they'll use that like we're a family kind of relationship thing. And a lot of times that can really lead to abuse, you know? And I really try not to do that to my staff. Like I don't expect my staff to come in and clean off hours, where a lot of people are like, oh, come on, like come help me clean or whatever. And it's like, this is still a relationship. It is still a business relationship. And I really try to keep that in mind, manage my own expectations of my staff. Because I really don't ever want to see that like abusive relationship ever established here. Because I've seen that happen in so many places. And it's a dangerous thing. And you know, if anyone listening is a small business owner, please don't push to your staff that you're a family and then use that as a leveraging tool. You know, that's not cool. You know, at the end of the day, you have a responsibility as a boss to care for your staff and provide them, you know, a level of appropriate compensation for the work that they're doing. And the expectations need to be commensurate with that.
We've gotten into this idea as individuals that, you know, you're talking about work pushing for, oh, we're a family, but you have an actual family.
Yep.
Why do you need another family? That's a little bit strange. And I think they just want to be put at the utmost important as your loved ones. And it's like, no, you kind of pay me to be here. Like, we're only friends because of your dollar.
Yeah.
Like you said, not healthy. And like, I already have a family. Work does not need to be family. We get really close with our coworkers. They become friends. And you advocating for your employees is very important. But like the whole work and family, like they're polar opposites. And
definitely,
I do not think that people should get that confused. When someone says they're like my second family, that's still, i.e., really close friends, not your family.
Yeah.
You don't go over to their house for Thanksgiving. That'd be a little weird if you had to spend Thanksgiving with your boss and they're like,
that's really
in-laws
funny, actually.
And you're like, hi, yeah, I work at the local place. Yeah, it'd be really awkward, in my opinion. I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, totally. You know, I've actually had some staff over for Thanksgiving.
Which oh, really?
Is really fun. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but you know, it's still like that thing where even within that, you know, there's a set of clear expectations of what it means to do a job, right? And a job description. And I really try to keep those things. Being cognizant of it helps prevent some of those issues that I see happening a lot of times. So it's an interesting balance. And I don't know if I'm doing it right. I'll tell you in 10 years.
I think you're doing a good job.
We'll see how it goes. Just, you know, trying to be a human being is kind of the big thing. And just, you know, treat my staff as well as I possibly can.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So then how do you continue to learn in order to stay on top of things within your role? You mentioned learning about the actual coffee itself is difficult. You're managing relationships with like literally your dairy provider. Like that's awesome that you support other local businesses instead of going to like a big chain for that kind of stuff. But then, you know, there's more to learn. I think we're always continuously learning. Mm-hmm. There's that growth mindset. So how do you do that now? Like, how are you going to do it tomorrow?
Totally. I think a lot of that has to do with outside of, you know, once you leave school, right? Right. Like learning is very much a set of assignments that happens in school, where a teacher or professor or whoever is directing your educational path. And they, because of the way that the education system works, like they need to have metrics to show that they're doing a good job being a teacher. And so they start testing and doing all that stuff. Outside of that, learning, you don't have to learn if you don't want to, you know, and I think your point that it's like growth as a mindset is really important. And I find that a lot of people kind of flounder for a while and lose sight of growth. Growing up, my youth pastor told me a lot, if you're not growing daily, you're dying gradually. And that's become a really big thing for me, is just, you know, constantly trying to grow and learn things. And so for me, I'm constantly learning new things. Literally right now on my, you know, my laptop, I have tutorials for how to use SketchUp, you know, pulled up, and trying to learn how to use SketchUp, which is like a 3D modeling software. There are some business applications for that, but for the most part, it's just like a new thing for me just to keep my own brain kind of entertained. My brain's, you know, I mentioned earlier that I tend to be pretty curious, and then I also deep dive into stuff really fast. My brain just like operates better when it's under a load of learning new things. So I feel like I'm constantly trying to learn new things. And that definitely extends into the business. I read articles constantly, and I'm trying to grow and learn from people who are better at this than I am, consuming material that's helpful within that. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but there are some really awesome ones that are, you know, really business driven. And so I think podcasts are a way that a lot of people really find compelling in terms of like digesting material. YouTube is an incredible resource, just full of how to learn how to do things. There's tons of articles at all for any given topic. Like, you can do some research, do a Google search and learn tons about it. And then also a really underrated thing that I think a lot of people miss is learning from a community, you know, and learning from people who are in your same boat. So for entrepreneurs, I did not get into the coffee business because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. You know, like, there are a lot of people like, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I do this thing and that thing, and I've built this company, brought it to this and sold it. And, you know, and like, that's all they think about. They listen to nothing but Gary Vaynerchuk videos and just like deep dive into leadership podcasts. And like, that's just all they do and all they think about. And they're just hustle all the time. And they're constantly just pounding that drum. And it's like, that's not me. You know, like, I'm a coffee nerd. I'm a barista, and I just want to be good at anything that I'm trying to do. And so I've had to become a bit of an entrepreneur and learn how to be a better one. And a lot of that has been around surrounding myself with other good entrepreneurs and really community driven people. So getting a mentor was a really big thing for me. I learned a lot from having a business mentor and then surrounding myself with other good entrepreneurs that I respect an aspect of their business or something that like I want to learn from them, and just building relationships with them and trying to grow that way. Being involved in like community organizations, like I'm really involved in the Downtown Everett Association, which has been a really awesome experience. And I've been able to rub shoulders with people that have been doing business for a long time and have seen, you know, a lot of ups and downs. And so that's been really great. Being really involved in the coffee community and knowing other coffee business owners has been really helpful, just to kind of run ideas by each other and kind of share. That's all been like huge ways that I've learned things and just kind of, you know, soaked up through osmosis as much as I possibly can. Yeah, so that's been a big thing. And then also you can learn a lot from yourself, you know, in mistakes that you make or things that, you know, you maybe could have approached differently. My preference is always to learn from someone else's mistakes rather than make my own. If you do make a mistake and you're not trying to learn something from it, then you're going to make that same mistake again. I think that's a really important learning opportunity and environment. So something I try to take seriously.
Yeah, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
That's a good thing to have. All right, that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
What does your current homebrewing setup look like right now?
Thanks for asking right now. Right now, it's literally just a pour over and a Barossa Virtuoso and a Bonavita electric gooseneck kettle and a scale. It has morphed over the years. It has been varying levels of monstrosity at any given point in time. Recently, I downsized a decent amount because my kids started working, doing schoolwork from home. And so I kind of took my coffee bar. I had like a whole dedicated coffee bar in my kitchen that I ended up taking down and dedicating for desk space for my kiddos. So we kind of really downsized, but that's pretty much what I've just been doing for the last couple of years. But I do have multiple espresso machines at home. I actually really like lever espresso machines. They're kind of vintage style. I really like manual things. My preferred vehicle is a manual transmission car, you know, and which is funny because I really like to automate as much stuff as I can from the business side of things, but just the tactile feel of working with a thing just feels good to me. You know, it's like I like using hand tools when I'm building something in the wood shop, stuff like that. So I really appreciate those things, but that's just like a personality driven thing. So I have a Ponovecchio Lusso lever machine, and I just sold actually La Pavoni Euro Piccola that I had. And then I also have a Flair, which is just a fully automatic or fully manual lever espresso machine. It doesn't have a pump or anything. You pour the boiling hot water out of a kettle into it yourself and then manually kind of push the lever down. So I've had that at various points, but right now it's just a pour over setup.
All right. That's awesome. And then a personal question that I've had, and I'm really excited to ask you this.
Yeah.
Because I haven't figured it out. But like, are you a fan of AeroPress or pour over? And like, what is the difference?
Oh, great question. I am much more a fan of pour overs. AeroPress, I like it for certain things, but there's a few differences. So pour over is gravity fed, right? Where you put your coffee in the brewer and then you pour water over it, hence the name pour over. And then the act of gravity and then the filtration method and then the shape of the brewer and the device itself restrict the water flow, right? So the finer your coffee is, the more slowly the water travels through it. And the coarser your coffee is, the faster the water travels through it, right? Because it's like, think about like pouring water through sand versus pouring water through rocks. It's always going to flow faster through rocks because there's more space, right? And so what's nice about coffee is that the kind of ideal flow rate will happen when everything tastes good, right? And so pour overs are fairly easy to dial in once you get them locked down and you find a good grind size that works well for you. AeroPress has pressure involved. So you actually are having to physically press down on it. What's interesting is you can actually, if you're crafty and you have certain tools, you can actually use an AeroPress like a pour over. So if you have a metal filter on an AeroPress, you can actually use it kind of like a pour over, which is really fascinating. And then you can run it through a paper filter if you want it paper filtered. But it's kind of fun. But what's interesting about an AeroPress, it has like, you know, for those of you who are listening who maybe aren't
aren't familiar,
it's basically a large syringe. So you put your coffee in the little like tube part of the syringe, and then it has a plunger at the back end. So you put your coffee in there and you add your water, and then you stick the plunger end on it, and then no water or coffee gets through. Usually a little bit will drop through. And some people actually brew them inverted, where they'll put the syringe, like the tube in, like the syringe part in the tube, and then put it upside down and then put the coffee in there and then brew it that way and then put the lid on top. I don't recommend that. It's really dangerous. I've seen people get severely burned from having one of those things tip over on them. So if you do it that way, be careful. Ultimately, the difference to me really shows up in the cup. When you actually like examine the coffee, the pour over is a lot clearer. It's less cloudy looking. The AeroPress is almost always really cloudy looking. And I don't have, this is just 100% theory, so I don't have any lab tests to clarify this, but what I think is happening is that you get a lot more tannins out of the AeroPress because of the additional pressure that you add to it, and that can shock some of the tannins out of the brewing bed. And so I've just noticed that most of the AeroPresses that I taste are a little bit more astringent and like drying, and they always have that kind of cloudy look because tannins diffuse light differently. You can see this sometimes whenever you brew like a hot tea and then you cool it down really fast versus like letting it chill slowly. If you let it chill slowly, you know, it looks way cloudier and dark, like murky looking, you know, versus like cooling it down really quickly. So it's just kind of interesting, but I think that just has to do with tannin extraction. I don't think it happens as much in a pour over brew. Yeah, my preference is pour overs. But I do like AeroPresses. They're really great for traveling and camping. That's what I use when I go camping. So yeah, and they're really versatile and fun. The thing that is cool about AeroPress is that you can have coffee that tastes really, like you can do crazy different recipes and have a really different brew. You can make a really strong cup and have it be fully extracted, and you can make like a really weaker cup and do a bypass, like have like a more normal cup of coffee. So it's really flexible and you can do lots of fun stuff with it. I prefer just to drink a pour over.
The reason I ask is because I started using a pour over. Starbucks used to carry the ceramic pour overs, and I always managed to mess mine up.
It happens.
I know you're supposed to wet the paper first, run hot water through it just to kind of get the papery taste out of it.
Yeah.
And then there's the blooming method, which I enjoy because it's, you got to be patient and you're waiting for that reward basically. And it's a whole thing. I actually prefer Chemex. Right now I'm drinking Death Wish coffee. It's really good. Have you ever had it?
I think I've had it once.
It's a dark roast. It's really smooth body. It's phenomenal because most dark roasts kind of dehydrate you. This one doesn't. And that's what I really like about it. It's just that smooth body. But I have a really hard time with pour overs because I don't know what it is. I always end up microwaving it afterwards too because it like gets cold fast, and I don't know what I'm doing.
That can be a thing. Sometimes if you're having a hard time with that, you can actually preheat your brewer a little bit more because a lot of them will suck heat a lot. So if you start with boiling water, that's another thing too that a lot of people don't do is your ideal brewing temperature for your water is supposed to be between 195 degrees and 205 degrees in Fahrenheit. That's in the brew bed itself. That's not the water that you're starting with. And a lot of times the brewer will take some heat and leach that out of your brew water. And so, you know, if you started at 200 degree water, a lot of times it'll be 180 or 175 by the time once you measure the actual bed itself. For the most part, I think it's pretty safe to just start with boiling water straight out of your kettle once it's kind of stopped boiling. That's usually a really good time to start. So maybe try that. Try preheating your brewer a little bit, you know, your Chemex or whatever. If you're using a pour over brewer, you can preheat that with just some water from the kettle, or you can actually take the lid off your kettle and set your pour over on top of your kettle if you're using an electric one, while it's actually heating up. And then that'll kind of get it nice and preheated for you, which will help a lot.
I'll give that a shot. That's thank you for that. So as far as narrative goes and future plans coming out of the pandemic, or any plans that you had before, where do you foresee, or what do you foresee in the future?
Yeah, you know, that's been a big thing that I've kind of been wrestling with a little bit. The pandemic has definitely thrown a wrench in things. So I gave you one of my life lessons that I learned earlier, not growing daily or dying gradually. I've got two other ones that are really big. One of them is don't change in the dark what's been affirmed in the light, which to me really drives home that just because, to use a silly analogy, it's kind of like when you turn the light off in your bedroom, you know, and you know where all your furniture is. And if you know where all your furniture is, even though you can't see it, you can still get around your bedroom okay without stubbing your toe. But if you assume that your furniture all of a sudden moved around, now you're not sure where to go. And so you just start wandering around aimlessly, you know, you end up stubbing your toe. And to me, when you have a good plan, it's a good plan kind of regardless. And you should always reevaluate your plan and make sure that it still makes sense. I think that's, you shouldn't just plow ahead with any plan that you have just because you planned it at one point. But if it's still a good plan, then you should still be trying to pursue it. One of my goals has been to expand expand and have more locations and establish a new baseline, I'd like to still move forward with that, you know? And so if nothing else, just to give me something to look forward to, you know, and have like that goal, you know, you obviously want to be a little more cautious and you shouldn't just rush ahead and make poor decisions. I also don't want to be timid and don't want to be scared and not planning to move forward. My goal has been to get 3 locations within 5 years. It might end up being closer to 6, the pandemic kind of pushing things around, but I'm still trying to make that happen. So I don't have anything solid. I've explored a few different opportunities and stuff in the past like year or two and nothing's quite panned out. That's my goal, is to keep working forward on that, keep my head forward and keep one foot in front of the other. That's been the goal. I'm gonna keep working on it.
Phenomenal. That's amazing. Great insight. A great plan. I like that.
Thank you.
Where can our listeners find you online?
Oh yeah, anywhere on the internet. Yeah, I'm all over the internet. You can follow Narrative Coffee on Instagram at narrative.coffee. Narrative.coffee is also our website domain. So you can just type in narrative.coffee into your web browser and it'll take you right to our website. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/narrativecoffee. And we're also on Twitter at Narrative Coffee. So you can find us there. You can find me personally on Instagram at Maxwell A. Mooney. I also have a latte art account that's kind of dormant, but that's seed bearing if you want to find me there. And then I'm on Facebook as well, just Maxwell A. Mooney. So I'm all over the internet. I am back on Twitter, but I'm not using it for much business things. So yeah, just Apex Legends, which is a video game that I play and I enjoy it very much. So I use that to keep up with the developers. So that's pretty much it.
So I will definitely have the website, the shop's Instagram,
yeah,
your personal Instagram, and whatever else I find that's
relevant.
Yeah, that's alive and doing well. I'll just put it in the show notes.
Yeah, so sounds great.
If anybody wants a quick hyperlink and doesn't want to type for some reason, all of Max's links and my links will be in the show notes. You can actually follow this podcast on Instagram. It's Hustlin' with Holly, spelled out, and it'll come right up. That'll also be in the notes. And yeah, Max, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for all your insight. I'm hoping that the young entrepreneur out there, or just the coffee lover, got something out of this. I'm sure they did. I got a lot out of this. I feel like I can make better pour overs. I'm so excited to try.
Cool.
And I'll let you know how that goes.
Having me on. Yeah.
All right. And if you guys want to visit Narrative Coffee Company, like I said, it's located in downtown Everett. The website, the Instagram, and I will try to have the address in the show notes as well. They operate 8 a.m. to 3:30 right now.
8 to 3. Yep.
Yep. 8 to 3. And hopefully that'll get a little bit longer as we head back into spring and summer and the global pandemic is gone. I can't wait for that.
The sooner the better.
You're done with work. You're done with school. You want to go out. You want to go have fun at places, but you can't because they all close when school ends or when your work ends.
Yep. I know it. Yeah. It's a little bit frustrating.
Well, thanks again, Max, for coming on. Appreciate you. Have a blessed day and you'll definitely be seeing me in here and you guys should definitely come visit too. Yeah, that's Everett Washington, Narrative Coffee Company in Everett Washington. Thank you. All right. Bye.